Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, March 16th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis. Idaho lawmakers send bill to the governor that would ban cities and counties from using eminent domain to create bike paths or greenways. More add the word protests at the Boise Capitol and more arrests. Senate approves parental education opt-out bill and also approves bill banning city and county laws regulating knives. And Congress members from Washington State are asking the federal government to allocate money and resources to study the starfish die-off. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from Feature Story News and the Pacifica Radio Network. The Idaho House today approved Senate Bill 2044, which would forbid local governments from using eminent domain to acquire property for greenbelt, biking, or walking trails while keeping the use of eminent domain for highways in place. The bill only applies to trails and greenways away from highways, and cities and counties can still use eminent domain to acquire land adjacent to highways for trails. The bill, which previously passed in the Senate, passed the House by a 54-15 vote today. It now goes to Governor Otter's desk. Opponents say the bill will allow a single landowner to hold out for extremely high prices because cities and counties will not be able to force them to sell for a fair market value. According to an account of the House debate in the Spokesman Review website, bill opponent Republican Lance Klo of Twin Falls said, "A vote on this today may have monumental changes in the way cities and counties design their roadways and their transportation systems in the future. It's going to move these potential bike paths to the fronts of properties along roads. It may impact the ability of having detached sidewalks. I think we could have written a better bill." Democratic Representative Elena Rubel of Boise said she talked to the Association of Idaho Cities and did other research and believes the bill will be the death knell for future trails in Idaho. Rubel said any single landowner anywhere along that path can bring the plan to a screeching halt. "While I think it's not the intent of the bill to stop the development of green belts and bike paths in Idaho, I think that would be the effect." The bill was sponsored by Republican Senator Jim Guthrie of McCammon. The Idaho Senate voted 23-12 today in favor of a bill that would allow parents to pull their children from any public school activity, class, or program they believe, quote, impairs the parents' firmly held beliefs, values, or principles. Bill co-sponsor Republican Senator Mary Souza of Coeur d'Alene said, "This bill aims to put in writing the rights of parents to be the primary decision makers for their children. Parents' rights are given to us by God. We are not saying the state is granting these rights. We are simply putting it in writing in our code that this is the case and we acknowledge the rights that parents have." The Idaho School Boards Association, the Idaho Education Association, and the Idaho School Administrators Association all oppose Senate Bill 1096A. Although attendance at school is compulsory for children between the ages of 6 and 18 in Idaho, the state gives parents broad homeschooling rights. Republican Senator Abby Lee of Fruitland said the bill is not clear on whose responsibility it is to replace the education that parents opt their children out of. Lee said, "If parents want to opt out of something or replace something, whose responsibility is that? And is that going to become onerous on our teachers and our school districts and potentially our parents?" The bill states school districts and charter schools must develop withdrawal procedures as well as policies regarding parents' participation in decisions involving their children's education. Democratic Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow voted against the bill. The bill now heads to the House. The Idaho Senate voted 25-10 today for a bill that would ban local governments from having laws regulating the use of or carrying of knives. Senate Bill 1092 sponsor Republican Lee Hyder of Twin Falls said, while waving around his folding buck knife, essentially what it says is that the state has primacy. Republican Senator Sean Keogh of Sandpoint said he voted against the bill because it does not reference schools and essentially leaves school districts in limbo about regulating knives. Democratic Senator Grant Burgoyne of Sandpoint said, "This could potentially impact school safety, in my estimation. We don't want to essentially veto with this bill prior public policy pronouncements with respect to the ability of school districts to regulate the carrying and possession of knives by their students." The bill now heads to the House. The Idaho House State Affairs Committee held off on voting on a bill to allow concealed weapons outside city limits without a permit after taking testimony on the bill all day long today. Most people testified against House Bill 243, even those who support concealed carry without a permit, because they say the bill does not go far enough. The bill replaces an earlier bill that would have mostly repealed Idaho's concealed weapons law across the board. House Bill 243 would allow the carrying of concealed weapons without a permit outside city limits. That was the topic of this line of questioning from Democratic Representative Melissa Wintrow of Boise, who was speaking with National Rifle Association Idaho lobbyist Dakota Moore.
So what you're saying is if a law enforcement agent comes across somebody with a weapon, you're always going to side with the individual with the weapon versus the law enforcement agent and their discretion.
Mr. Moore?
Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely not correct. We're talking about appellate review on this. So it's difficult without facts before you giving me a fact pattern, a procedural history of a case.
The other big difference in this piece is currently the code says if you're outside of city limits and you're engaged in a lawful outside or activity like hunting or trapping or fishing, you can carry concealed without a permit. This takes that out and just says outside city limits. So what you're saying in this new bill is that if you're inside city limits, you still have to have a concealed carry permit, but outside city limits you do not. And does that also include any car with the gun loaded?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Wintrow, and I'm glad you brought up this provision. So under current law, if you go to subsection 9 of existing, so 18-3302, subsection 9, it currently has a provision, and I'd be more than happy to read it to you if the chairman would indulge me just momentarily. So 18-3302. Subsection 9 says, while in any motor vehicle inside the limits or confines of any city, a person shall not carry a concealed weapon on or about his person without a license to carry a concealed weapon. So current law, the provisions that apply to carrying of concealed weapons, loaded concealed weapons, only apply inside city limits, inside your vehicle. Now, you did correctly reference 1833.02.12d. And 12d does say, the requirement to secure a license to carry a concealed weapon under this section shall not apply to the following persons. And then it goes down to d to say, any person outside the limits or confines of any city while engaged in lawful hunting, fishing, trapping, or other lawful outdoor activity. So it does say lawful outdoor activity. The problem with that language is, what does lawful mean? I believe that if I'm walking down the street, breathing, I'm engaged in a lawful outdoor activity. If I'm bird watching, I'm engaged in a lawful outdoor activity. And so we need to clear up that ambiguity. As a matter of fact, last year, House Bill 514 attempted to do that. And I believe it passed the legislature with only passed the House of Representatives with only 7 dissenting votes. So members from your caucus did agree that this needs to be clarified.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Representative Wintrow.
So, Dakota, I guess what I'm asking is, does that now mean that if I'm outside of city limits, I do not need a concealed carry permit at all, and I can have a loaded gun in my car on the road outside city limits?
Mr. Chairman? That is correct.
So why the difference? Why do I need to have a concealed permit in city limits versus outside of city limits? What's the big difference there?
Mr. Chairman, well, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge the first thing that you said, which is there are sheriffs that disagree on this, right? I believe that 183302 subsection 9 is very clear with regard to possession of a loaded firearm in a motor vehicle outside city limits. But the fact that there are sheriffs, there are law enforcement that disagree on this and probably enforcing it based on their belief is a clear display of the necessity for this bill because it makes it very clear. Second of all, what I would say with regard to why the distinction between outside the city limits and inside the city limits. If you're inside a city, you are, and I must say that I unequivocally believe that there is no inherent distinction because I believe that these rights should extend to everyone, whether inside the city limits or outside the city limits. But that's not the bill we're testifying on. The one thing that I will say is that, say, take Idaho County, for instance. I think it probably spans 200 miles. You might be 70, 80 miles from the nearest sheriff at any given moment. That situation never arises within a city with regard to police departments. You always have somebody, whether it's prompt enough or not, which usually it isn't, but you'll have somebody there, a law enforcement officer there, generally upon a call. That doesn't always happen in counties. That doesn't always happen in rural counties. And so that's the big distinction here. That's originally why this was this provision was put in. And I believe that it needs to be clarified and remain in there.
The president of Vanuatu is.
And that was National Rifle Association Idaho lobbyist Dakota Moore answering questions from Democratic Representative Melissa Wintrow of Boise at the meeting of the Idaho House State Affairs Committee today. The committee was holding public hearings on a new bill that would allow the carrying of concealed weapons without a permit outside of city limits in Idaho. The hearing will continue at a future date, and the committee will hold a vote on the bill at a later date. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Senate State Affairs Committee today approved House Bill 154, which will ban the use of video doctor's examinations in prescribing abortion pills. Democratic Senator Sherry Buckner Webb of Boise said the bill restricts a woman's access to safe and legal health care, and it's not necessary, and moved to hold the bill in committee. That motion failed. Senate Republican Caucus Chair Todd Lakey of Nampa said, "I think telemedicine is a useful technology, particularly when you're talking about having access to a specialist that can't be in the room when you're working with your consulting or treating physician. But I don't think it's appropriate to create greater access to a lower standard of care." Lakey said such treatment could be dangerous for patients. Idaho State Police made 25 arrests of Add the Words protesters today at the state capitol in Boise, including six people who were arrested twice. According to the Spokesman Review website, the protesters, who have escalated tactics to civil disobedience after 9 years trying to get sexual orientation and gender identity added to the state human rights law, blocked all doors to the legislature's bill drafting office. Current Idaho human rights law protects people from discrimination based on race, religion, gender, and disability in employment, housing, and public accommodations. For the first time in 9 years this year, lawmakers held a full hearing on the Add the Words bill, but the House State Affairs Committee killed the bill on a party line vote. After the hearing, some of the Republicans who voted against indicated there were talks on amending the bill, alluding to language that might grant exemptions based on religious beliefs. However, this year's legislative session is winding down towards a late March or early April adjournment, and no such compromise bill has been introduced. Police made more than 100 arrests on the issue last year, and there were 23 arrests on March 2nd of this year. Protesters released a statement today saying people are welcome to leave this office and we will make way to protect public health and safety, but we intend to allow entry only to legislators beginning work or drafting a new bill to add the four words sexual orientation, gender identity to Idaho's Human Rights Act, our existing state non-discrimination law. Today we stand peacefully, silently, and respectfully in place in the Capitol, where we will stay until serious effort is made to craft a bill to add the four words to Idaho law, showing the Idaho legislature's respect for religious values and the Golden Rule. Civil disobedience arrests for trespassing went without incident today. Idaho State Police Lieutenant Brad Doty told the Spokesman Review, "They're very calm and peaceful people. We're just getting them processed." You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse. The six Democrats from the state of Washington in Congress have sponsored a bill called the Marine Disease Emergency Act, which would allocate $12 million in research money to scientists to find out why starfish are dying off and turning to goo. Representative Denny Heck is leading the effort to declare sea star wasting syndrome an emergency. The die-off is one of the largest seen in nature and is affecting West Coast starfish from Mexico to Alaska and seems to be tied to global warming because the disease is more rampant in water that's a lot warmer than before. The wasting syndrome is also affecting starfish on the East Coast, although that is not as well documented as the West Coast die-offs. Cornell University ecology professor Drew Harvell said, "There has never been an outbreak of disease in natural populations of animals that I know that's been this large." Harvell said, "They're a keystone species. You take them out of the Sound or out of the Pacific Ocean, and it hurts animals like fish and whales that are higher up on the food chain. We can't have essential species like starfish disappear. That would cause dire impacts. It's pretty horrific. They develop large lesions in the body wall, and their organs start to fall out of those, and their arms walk away. The first priority in any disease outbreak is to figure out what's causing it. It's something we're equipped scientifically to deal with. We have all the tools, but they cost money." The University of Idaho says its next provost will be John M. Weinseck, who comes to Idaho from Virginia Commonwealth University. He will start work June 1st. Weinseck replaces the University of Idaho's last non-interim provost, Doug Baker, who left in 2013. Vice President Catherine Aiken has served as interim provost for almost 2 years. Besides being the top academic officer at the UI, Weinseck will be in charge of strategic planning and accreditation. Weinseck was South Florida University engineering dean for 6 years and spent most of his time as a professor at the University of Iowa. Weinseck said in a statement, "You're poised at a moment in time where you're looking to grow enrollment, and that becomes an opportunity to have discussions about how to take the next step as a university to build on the excellent foundation you have and really accelerate and build on the quality of the education and the scholarship that's already going on at the university." Writing about his past, Weinseck said, "It was early in my career when I realized faculty and curriculum could have such an impact on students. When you are dealing with students, helping students on a daily basis, you are going to have a multi-generational impact because they are going to reach out and do things for others." Members of a newly formed group called Wake Up WSU met with Washington State University President Elson Floyd and other school administration officials Thursday night to address the racial climate on campus. Wake Up WSU was founded after a February 21st incident in which a Phi Delta Theta member used a racial epithet at a group of black women and told them to leave the fraternity's social function. Some among The about 100 students at the meeting told Floyd, Dean of Students Melinda Husky and Financial Services Vice President Brian Dixon, that they want stiff punishment for the fraternity because students will be discouraged from attending WSU if the house isn't made an example of what shouldn't be done. Phi Delta Theta members have told the media the person who directed the racial slur at the young black women has been expelled from the fraternity. According to an account in the Daily News of Thursday night's meeting, Floyd said, "We are profusely apologetic for the unfortunate circumstances you had to endure. We offer as an institution our sincerest apologies for your having to encounter that. It's unfortunate and we regret that that circumstance occurred." The group had other grievances, including the lack of faculty of color on the Pullman campus, teaching racial sensitivity to freshmen, dealing with injustice endured by undocumented students, and the intrusions on the feeling of safety among students due to toxic comments on an anonymous, geographically centered online site called Yik Yak. President Floyd said, "I haven't seen anything in this list of grievances that I could not sign on to right now at this very moment. I will also respond in writing to you as well because I think it is crucial to document where we've been. Your voices have been heard, and we will do everything as best we can as a university to be responsive to your needs." According to the student newspaper, the Daily Evergreen, Floyd said he would respond to the grievances in writing after spring break. However, Floyd said shutting down the fraternity, which is not located on university-owned land, is beyond his authority. According to the Daily News, Dean of Students Melinda Husky said at the meeting, "There's a process we have to follow before we take recognition away from any organization. That investigation is ongoing through the Office of Student Conduct and the Office of Equal Opportunity. Their finding of fact will make it possible for us to take next steps." Black Student Union President Christina Medina reflected student concerns that the incident will not be adequately addressed and forgotten as time goes on if action isn't taken. Medina said, "What a lot of students are worried about is the timeline of the implementation of these grievances. With that said, the University of Oklahoma was very swift in responding to that situation. While I understand there is not a video, there are firsthand accounts which the victims have said their story and the fraternity has said it to be true as they have terminated that membership. What I would like to contend is why isn't WSU moving as fast as the University of Oklahoma?" The Evergreen quoted Wake Up WSU member Segal Hussein saying the meeting was productive. Hussein told the paper after the meeting, "Anytime you get the president of the university to attend your meeting on a busy schedule, I think says a lot. However, actions speak louder than words." Also on Thursday night, WSU students held a candlelight vigil on the steps of Todd Hall to remember Hispanics who died in recent months. The Brown Lives Matter vigil was primarily spurred by the police killing of 35-year-old orchard worker Antonio Zambrano Montes in Pasco February 10th. Zambrano Montes was running away from three police who gunned him down after responding to a report of a man throwing rocks at cars in the area. The Evergreen quoted Black Student Union President Medina saying, "Every 28 hours, a brown or black man is killed by law enforcement. We've got to come together and pay our respects. With everything that's going on, we need to build alliances. This isn't just a Latino thing tonight." University of Washington officials in Seattle are investigating a case in which people at the Sigma Alpha Epsilon house shouted racial slurs and made obscene gestures to passing demonstrators during a February 25th Black Lives Matter protest that went by the house. UW Student Life President Denzel Sweet said in a statement, "The behavior described is completely inconsistent with the university's values and expectations. We believe strongly in the value of our diversity and respect for our differences. We are committed to fostering a climate of civility that honors those differences. Any behavior antithetical to this is unacceptable." UW Sigma Alpha Epsilon Fraternity President Michael Hickey said their investigation shows the slurs came from non-members. Washington lawmakers on the House Public Safety Committee heard a pitch for a law that would add a year in prison to anyone sentenced for a crime if they used a drone in the commission of that crime. The bill has already passed the Senate by a 34-15 vote. The law focused on so-called hobby drones, which often come in the form of a small remote-controlled helicopter. Lawmakers are concerned criminals might use them with mounted cameras to spy and scope out homes before breaking in or for stalking-type crimes. Bill sponsor Republican Senator Pam Roach of Auburn said, "We got to come down hard on people who are doing that to stop them from even thinking about it." Utah lawmakers have approved spending over $12 million for a legal fight with the U.S. government in an attempt to obtain state title to the 31 million acres of federal land in the state. Republican lawmakers in the legislature say the federal government is overreaching in their limits on oil and gas leasing, mining, and grazing on federal lands. Republican Representative Mike Noel of Kanab told the Salt Lake City Tribune he thinks federal scientists aren't doing their job properly when regulating uses of federal lands. Noel said, "We need to have additional people on the ground to analyze data." Democratic Representative Brian King of Salt Lake City, who opposed the bill, said, "It's an under siege mentality that wants to create and foster an adversarial relationship with the federal government. The legislation, which is awaiting a signature from the governor, will allocate money for a states' rights lawsuit and allocates $1 million to the Attorney General's office for multi-stage sage-grouse litigation with the federal government." The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering listing sage-grouse under the Endangered Species Act. Other money would go towards $2 million in contracts for writing legal and public relations strategies in the effort to gain control of federal lands. Salt Lake City environmental activist Tim Wagner said, "What they will get is a 10-page plan that says drill baby drill and log baby log. They are not interested at all in responsible management of these lands. Their only interests are in extractive use. I wish they would quit blowing smoke and mirrors." The Moscow City Council will be asked tonight to adopt a new street closure policy drafted by city staff. The intent of the policy is to provide consistent and predictable methods and standards for managing use of the public right-of-way for non-traditional uses such as parades, neighborhood block parties, community events, and construction activities.